Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special spooky Minds on the Masters and interview program dedicated to plumbing the minds of experts in the fields of art, science, and living authentically. My name is Jeffrey Minds, and our master for this evening is experiencing some issues. Dirk, do we have you?
Can you hear me?
Oh, there we go. Dirk, yeah. Masterson. Writer of over 72 novels, genre fiction, 4,000 short stories, all out of print. Welcome to Minds on the Masters, Dirk Masterson.
Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not much of a reader, but I know a lot of people are, and I know that when people write things, they get turned into things that I like, you know, like TV shows and like professional wrestling and that sort of thing. So to kind of see the origin of where the things that I like Jason, Freddie, you know, coming, it's cool. It's really awesome. But you know what? And I hate to start off on kind of a negative note, but the critics love you. But you've gotten a little bit of anger in the community, right?
Oh, I have been described as the Aldi brand, Dean Koontz, the bargain basement, Clive Barker, poor man's John Saul, you know, like that. I kept expecting a Stephen King thing, but I asked somebody about it once, and they said you're not good enough to compare to him.
Well, yeah, that's interesting though, but because you know, while you have, there's so much negativity out there, you know, out in the world, on the internet.
I was canceled before they invented the cancel culture. That's all.
Oh man.
They say it was a matter of talent, but I made a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, totally, man. 72 novels, 4,000 short stories.
That 4,000 must be a typo. Somebody's had an extra zero in there. Although I did, for a period from 1979 to 1986, I did write 53 short stories a year, just to think I was getting someone over to Ray Bradbury.
Oh wow!
I would send it to him sometimes. He would never respond, but sometimes I'd send it to him and be like, "Hey, learn to drive." He hated that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, silence is oftentimes a sign of, you know, in my experience, you know, at the paintball range.
Respect.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. 53 short stories a year. I don't even think I read a third of that a year. That must have been tough, huh?
You write from experience. You know, like if I got hit by a car, uh-huh, 1 year, I would write like 12 to 15 stories about that car hit, you know, like that would be a thing.
So like the car is like possessed and coming at you in one, but maybe in the other, the car's the good guy.
That whole thing, you know, like it got a little hacky after Christine, but I felt like I really refined, like, cause I would write a lot about what the car looked like.
Yeah.
Which is just really just detailed schematics.
Oh yeah. You ever put a Camaro in one of those stories?
Oh yeah, no, that was actually a multi-part series.
Oh,
unfortunately, yeah. I was sued by several companies for many reasons. So that's all out of print. You're only going to find that on some cheap little site.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I kind of put out there at the beginning, it's all out of print these days, right? I mean, do you got anything in active circulation?
But I think you have to know how to make that work. You know?
Right. Right. And so how is that, how are you making it work? How's that going?
Oh, I'm retired. All I do now is I eat popsicles and play video games, and go over to, a snowy haired fella's house sometimes,
play some poker or something.
Nice, real nice guy. He used to be big in the films, but I forget his name sometimes. He goes by, you know, couple pseudonyms.
Oh, word. Yeah, no. What are you playing now? You play Call of Duty?
No, I never really got. I mean, I got on there for a bit, but it felt like I was in a middle school hallway. You know, it was a little muck.
Yeah.
So I, you know, these days, this great dating simulator They call it's a lot of fights in it though. It's called Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, right. I think I heard about this before.
A lot of good opportunities there.
There's a lot of reading in that game too, right?
I mean, you know, I hear that there were a lot of people that read for that. I never had anybody do audio work for my books, but I did for a time. I did record everything onto tapes, but unfortunately, I never converted those tapes to digital, and they were lost in one of several fires that I've had in my homes over the years.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough, man. That's rough. Well, I mean, you know what? Like, let's get into a little bit here, because you know, we've established you're an old head, as some might say, kind of in the writing scene.
Oh no, I've been in the business for years. You know, I mean.
I mean, it's. How do you see things different from when you were doing it versus it is what's going on today? What was it like in your day?
Well, I mean, these days they've got a lot of the Kindles and the electronic readings, and they seems like they're very popular. You know, there's certain there's a Mr. Tingle out there, I think, that does pretty well. Something that I've been branching out into, and it's a pseudonym, I'm not going to tell you, but it's the genre of werewolf pirate romance is really, really big these days, I've noticed.
Oh wow.
Back in the day, you know, you needed an agent, you needed to meet the right people, you need to go to the right place. I remember, you know, I wasn't even a horror writer at the start. I was a sci-fi writer.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, no, I 1989, I went to San Diego Marriott to meet Harlan Ellison. At least I think it was Harlan Ellison.
I hear I've heard he's kind of a jerk. I've heard he's a, you have a good experience with him?
He's a bit litigious, so I'm just going to say I walked away with a black eye in the lawsuit, and I can't say whether or not it was actually Harlan Ellison. His estate may have things to say about that, but that's when I met Mort Humphreys. Now, he was my agent. He later told me, I was not awake for this, but he later told me that he saw Harlan pop me, and I don't know what we were talking about when it happened, because I blacked out to before the conversation, so I don't know if it was Harlan Ellison. He said it was Harlan Ellison.
I mean, you know, that's the important thing. I mean, you know,
I'm not gonna pursue anything with that, but we're sitting on the curb afterwards, you know, he's like, hey, what do you do? Why are you here? You know, it's like a convention. For writers, sci-fi writers, and I'm like, brother, I write sci-fi. I'm Philip K. Dick on benzos. I just recited a few lines right there, you know. And he was, you know, this is before the pot, but Mort, he says, you know when they say like you got a face for radio,
yeah.
Mort was like, you got a voice for horror. And he set me up. No manuscript, nothing. He's like, I'll be your agent.
Right there. You didn't have to put anything in his hands. You didn't have to.
It was a different time in 1989.
Well, yeah, no, sounds like it, man. Yeah. So what was your first work that you got put out under Mort Humphreys? What was that first book?
Well, I mean, he was looking for a very specific kind of mass market paperback, something that can be printed easy. He had a cousin who did the art, and it had to be salacious in some sense, but it also had to be interesting. So I think I was a bit of a forward thinker. My first book was Zombie Yoga.
Dead dudes who are not dead, but they're also doing stretches.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this is before the yogas were everywhere. You know, when it was just a thing that you.
They're everywhere these days. Yeah, they're everywhere. You can't go to the north side without seeing. Again, just drowning in yogas, man, drowning.
I mean, back then people liked to say calisthenics more, but anyway. No, I mean, I think the tagline for that one was corpse pose gone wrong.
Nice.
I was proud of that one. It's, you know, I had one baby die in happy baby pose.
Come back as a zombie.
Listeners are gonna like that one.
I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, and you're not kidding when you said that. Like, it was different back in the day because, you know, 89, you could have a baby zombie. These days, you know, people might not be so happy. You know, you got to have your zombie's age of majority minimum, otherwise you're getting an angry email. But this, you put this zombie baby out.
I blame Zack Snyder for all that. Yeah.
I mean, what else? What else goes on in the zombie yoga? It's pretty cool. Give us the rundown. Give us a little synopsis.
I mean, the critics thought it was a bit much. I did give a lot of details of the instructor's ever disintegrating outfit as they fought the zombies. And maybe it went on for a while, but I hear that trauma yoga is still pretty big. And that, you know, I was told it was exploitative by women at conventions.
I mean, I don't even know what that word means, but it doesn't sound like it was all that bad at all. I mean, you can give people.
It was zombie yoga. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it sounds like zombie yoga. Yeah. What more do you want? No, that's crazy. What are some other titles that you put out in this stretch?
The Hollow Horror of Harrow House.
Mm.
Now my agent told me that was a difficult one to pronounce, but I was happy with it. You know, I spent 3 weeks locked up in a Hotel 6 eating packs of nicotine gum to make the deadline, but I, you know, and I lost most of the advance, and that was wedding number two. But let's see, that was a pretty good one though. It was your standard ghost story. You know, there was a strong female protagonist. I like to say I was Buffy the Vampire Slayer before she was around, you know, before the Joss Whedon.
Before
Joss Whedon cut his hair and became a whatever it was.
No, I mean, so, you know, it sounds between, you know, like getting this car crash, you make these stories. You're in the Hotel 6 writing about the Hollow Horror of Harrow House. I mean, is this how you get your inspiration for your works? Are you kind of just going around with a big spongy brain and having like spooky stuff kind of just seep in and then you just dunk it back out? Is that how it goes with you when you're writing these things?
It's alchemy, brother. You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both.
Yeah.
And there you have the facts of life.
Right. So what about The Reckoning? I saw this on
that's a blast from the past. Yeah.
I think I saw this on Great Reads, Cool Reads, and some website for nerds.
Yeah, one of those sites there. But no, if you look at it on the cover there, you know, they've got it's your standard ghost story, but it's also little kid is haunted by ghost, right?
Right.
It's a subgenre of horror, you know. And before I get into the plot, though, let me tell you, there's an item out there. You know, there is if you really want to know the secret of all this,
there is a
formula out there to make all this stuff. You got your coons. You mentioned. I mean, you look at the book Phantoms, and you look at the book Salem's Lot. You know, two different authors, two different things, but it's a city, it's a town drama. A ghost would win, nobody would know what happened. That guy, Brian Lumley with the Necroscope Scott saga, was like he was just huffing Madame Blavatsky, you know, and she was a smoker. You look at town, you have a mix of inhabitants, sometimes a cop there, you know.
Right.
You gotta have him haunted by decades long unsolved murder.
Yeah,
that's key.
Yeah, you know? I know. I mean, and it kind of makes sense. You know, I'm not much of a writer. I'm more of an interviewer. That's where my skills lie. That in the paintball field. But you know, when you have a situation. Oh yeah, man, yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, what kind of rig you use?
You know what? Well, they don't let me on the range with the. I do a lot of my own custom work. You know, I got a.
Oh, you're one of those.
I got a triple feed bilayer.
Wow.
Yeah. Got a rev stick. Got one of those rev sticks. Rev stick. Dangerous. E. Yeah.
I used to have a Cardinal XL.
Oh wow!
That
old school.
When I stopped going out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you can.
How come Let's jump on that. That sounds fun.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. It's a lot of fun, you know, when I can get out there, you know, we have to, I kind of aim to go towards near the end of the day because, you know, you get these kids that show up and they don't know how to take a Revstick XR, you know, they don't know how to take one to the chest and not go crying away. But anyway,
But the reckoning, we'll get back to the reckoning.
Yeah.
It was a little kid is haunted by evil ghosts. Now, and a lot of those, you'll get the formula and it'll be like, oh, you know, mom thinks that the kid's evil and the dad's like, what are you talking about? And then the kid's evil. But then the kid keeps telling the other kid how evil they are.
Right.
And then eventually everybody just dies out by the end of the book. But in this case, I thought it would be a good twist if the little kid involved,
right,
if the ghost mistook a small person for a little kid, you know.
And oh, then, you know, okay.
He had a scooter and a mortgage, you know, but this ghost thought it was a little kid, and then the hijinks ensued. You know, he was a defense attorney for a psychotic who got the death penalty, and there's this whole ghost duel in the third act.
Wow.
I don't want to give it away.
Wow.
If somebody wants to find it, but I mean, Peter Dinklage was called for what was optioned, but no, he never answered anybody's call.
So. Oh no! I mean that's fun. I mean, so that's almost like kind of a comedy of errors or something, you know, where you've got.
I think they thought I was getting a little too slapsticky at that point, so I went deep into like a little Lovecraft at the end. You know, it was trapped inside a an elevator,
right?
It's nothing but void outside, and that was a 36,000 word piece.
Wow.
With many, many diagrams, and I included footnotes, which is another two volumes.
Right. I mean, I guess that's as good a point as any to bring about. You know, I tried looking for some of your work online because we've mentioned it's out of print, and you know, there's a lot of these mass market paperbacks that are, you know, going for, you know, 25, 50 cents, you know, buck and some change. But then there are these really nice looking leather bound versions of these books. I think I saw one for Abyssal Echoes, for example, Parallel Axis, Arpeggios and Klaxtor 8. Actually, I'm pulling this up right now. Yeah, here we go. Martian Simulacrum. Leather-bound, I can't say prices on the radio, but this is entering the five figures. What's the story behind these, man? What's up with that?
Well, if somebody's lucky enough to get them, you know, it's something that I kind of spent my advance on printing them off.
Oh, wow.
All these leather-bound, you know, like, make Easton jealous kind of thing,
right?
And then turned out that I had too many cows had been slaughtered for PETA's taste. So PETA,
people for the ethical treatment of animals, just some like hippies.
Yes, they got a hold of these piles of leather bound books, which I thought I was going to retire, you know, selling these off, but then. They destroyed most of it. It was very, very toxic fallout. I think it destroyed a bird sanctuary that was nearby. But
that's rough, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's standard. But those are extremely rare now. I wish I still had some, but they stole it from me directly. So.
Yeah. So what you're saying is just to touch on that, you're saying you would have a book idea and they, you know, they would give you an advance. Let's say the Haunted Camaro of volume 3, just for the sake of the example,
right.
You get the
Haunted
advance.
Yeah.
And then you're taking that and you're immediately turning that around and getting a limited run of leather bound versions of this. Several thousand page, 100-page, 1,000-page book.
With special care and attendant to the font and kerning was very, very important to get the right kerning.
Kerning.
And all that.
I don't even know what that is.
I'm not going to go into it right now, but
I'll make a note to look this up later.
Yeah, you make a alert. Yeah, good luck spelling that. But no, the binding, and the leather. Well, I mean, I think the leather itself, it's apparently some special cow. I don't know exactly what cow they got this from, but it really, those PETA people were not happy about it. It was, allegedly it was some sort of, special cow.
Right.
I don't know if it was.
I don't know much about cows, but when I go down to Wisconsin, they got cows everywhere. And I'm sure that, you know, like, I'm sure there's some special cows in the mix. I mean, they got to have special cows, you know. They're special everything else. Why wouldn't there be special cows? And I mean, if you're getting your stuff done in leather, why not get special leather? It's special book, special leather.
That was the idea. I paid extra for the special leather. And right. Then, yeah. You know, I didn't know that that was going to be a sticking point for this
group
ethical treatment people. And I think that they, you know, I think they kill more birds with their burnings than anything that they like to admit. But
I mean, that's a spooky idea for a story, right? I mean, you ever done one where like there's this special cow maybe and they kill the cow, and then I don't know, maybe like the farmer's ghosts come out and then they kill a bunch of birds. What do you think? I mean, that's like a spooky idea, right?
I just think you should leave it to professionals, son. I mean, there's people who get paid a lot of money to think of these things, and I think you should stick with this radio bit. I think you really got something going with these interviews.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair. It is called Minds on the Masters. I'm Jeffrey Minds. You're the master, Dirk Masterson, as a matter of fact.
That's right. You don't have access to that grimoire, you know, like that grimoire. If you were able to read it, I mean, R.L. Stine gave this all away a long time ago because they gave him the grimoire and he's like, I can do this.
Oh,
I gave it to Christopher Pike and he's like, I'm just gonna watch Twin Peaks a couple times and that'll be that.
I have read R.L. Stine though. I love those Goosebumps books. Those still freak me out a little bit, man. You look at the cover, you see that dummy. Ooh.
I mean that if you look online right now, you'll see that like torn up, acceptable copies with library stamps all over them, $55.
Wow.
And that's out of print. That's out of print. And I think that's out of print until R.L. Stine stops signing things. Now, it used to be you could just send off. You could just send off to Stephen King and be like, hey, sign this first edition, Carrie. And he'd be like, whatever, I'm Stephen King.
That sounds like him.
Stopped doing it after a while because it was tiresome, but you know,
yeah,
like that Ringo Starr guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, Gorgo, Gorgo's great guy. I wanted to have.
I met him at a party once, actually.
Oh really? Gorgo? Really? Gorgo,
oh,
yeah.
No, Gorgo. Yeah, Gorgo had a whole. He, you could sit. You just put a quarter in him and watch him go.
Oh,
he will talk about all day how he was the fifth.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like it's when you have that, when you're that close to sort of the pinnacle of fame in your field, you know, it's hard not to like think about that a lot. I mean, and I guess for you, you know, I mean, have you, you know, you brought up Stephen King, you bring up R.L. Stine, you bring these masters of horror up. I mean, how do you feel, you know, as compared to your contemporaries? How do you feel with your interactions with them? Have they been positive? You know, have you come away happy with the way you've been treated by your colleagues?
Now, I wish I could say that it was an easy road. I would say, you know, you look at what I put out there. I write 53 stories a year. What have you done today, Stephen? Have you gone jogging?
Well, he's been doing a little, you know, back in the day, I imagine.
Well, I mean, that was part of the thing, you know. Like back in the day, there was a lot of that going on. There's in the 80s. I mean, that's why I didn't get started until 89. And then, you know, like it didn't help the career. Well, it did help the career, I guess, that Harlan Ellison may have punched me. But I think, you know, outside of that, there was the time I met Dean Koontz, and he asked me to not come here near him or his family.
Oh, wow.
That was upsetting. That was an upsetting time. I was like, but I'm a fan. I'm a contemporary. He's like, I know who you are. Get away from us.
Was this like a first blush. Oh wow.
It was like we had not interacted in any way before. I think it was my appearance.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I mean, at the time, I was very. I had a lot of burst capillaries on my nose.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
That was a
rough.
really, it's a different time.
That inspire any works? Did you write anything? Did that like bring a little? Did you write anything about that? That was like about that experience?
I mean, I mean, I kind of incorporated it with one of the what you have like I was telling you about the town motif before,
Right, yeah.
You got a mix of inhabitants, you got the you get you gotta you if you're gonna have an alcoholic, what's the most conflicting thing? You can make him a cop, right?
Of
But
course.
you don't just make him a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. You gotta mix it up. You make him a Muslim or Jewish or Baha'i. Baha'is especially, But you give him that haunted by decades unsolved murder. His wife, his kids were involved. Maybe they're the ones.
And they have like,
Instant character.
and you
It's
have a
instant character.
throw a little burst capillaries in the nose, and then bam, you got it. You got it right there.
Yeah, no, you got. No, I mean, that's three Mary Sues in a trench coat, right? Yeah, no, third act, you get him and the strong female protagonist, who might be his daughter, or it
Ooh,
might not. It might
yeah.
be the nurse that just moved into town.
Right. Wow.
Um,
Yeah, no,
you
I
need
mean
her,
it,
yeah, you need her skills.
you hear you can hear this to the listener. You can hear the way that, I mean, this is the quintessential mind on the masters. Every episode's like is a master class from masters, and you hear it. You hear it right now, just the way it comes out of you, Dirk. The just the you paint of you paint this incredible scene, all of these characters, and it just flows. It just flows like a waterfall or
That's
something.
right.
Well, I think we're about half-ish way through the program. We're gonna go to a quick musical break while I refresh my beverage. We are talking to Dirk Masterson, genre writer of over 72 novels, and was it 4,000 short stories or 400?
No, 400, 400,
400 short
4,000.
stories.
Somebody put an extra zero.
Yeah. I mean, so it might have been me even. But yeah, we're going to go to a quick musical break. In about 5 minutes, we'll be back with Dirk Masterson. I am Jim Mines, or Jeffrey Mines, rather. And we'll be right back with Mines on the Masters. Please stay tuned. Yeah, Jason Takes Manhattan. That's fun. It's fun. You get to get him in the city, hanging out. You ever do like a murderer in the city kind of thing? Hold on. Having some technical issues real quick. Hold on. Sorry, buddy. Can't hear you. Can't hear you. Here you
Can you
go.
hear me?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But yeah, Jason Takes Manhattan. Good stuff. You know what I mean?
No, Jason Takes Manhattan. I always appreciated when the fella tried to box Jason on top of the roof. I always felt like that's the move. You get all these books. You got the semi unlikable guy, who might have a heart of gold, and he might get redeemed at some point. But he always meets a horrible end about the end of the second act, usually. Like the fella in the Jurassic Parks that said, "Clever girl," like that guy, heart of gold, kind of a rough guy. But the second that Velociraptor ate him, immortal.
And we're back. This is Mines on the Masters, a special spooky edition. My name is Jeffrey Mines, and our master for this evening is Dirk Masterson, a writer of over 72 novels and 400 short stories in genre fiction, sci-fi, horror, you name it. So we talked in the first part of the program, we were talking about kind of your work and sort of the how you got your start and
the craft. We discussed the craft somewhat.
Yeah, the craft. That's a great way to put it. But what about the man behind the craft? You know, what's you mentioned that your second marriage. Do you feel like your writing career has that taken a toll on your personal life?
Well, I mean, I've been married 7 times, but I can say all of them were successful.
Really? Really?
Well, I mean, until they found out of each other. Hey!
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was...
I wouldn't want to be there for that.
it was the 90s at that point, so, you know.
Yeah, a lot was going on in the 90s.
A lot of different time back then. Way different time back then. Yeah. You know, all your listeners that were born in 2002, watch out. It was a crazy time, not long before you were born.
I mean, you know, you can't even put on like I have younger friends that I meet that I have over, and sometimes, and I want to put on like a Police Academy movie, you know, like Citizens on Patrol.
They don't get it. Michael Winslow goes right over their head.
Yeah, man, they just don't get it. They don't get it. They don't make them like they used to, you know. But
you need to have had a landline. Understand the delicate sensibilities of Michael Winslow and his many voices and sounds. I believe his name is Michael Winslow. I may have to check on that.
We could check on that a little later. But so you're saying saying that you balanced your craft, as you put it, and your family life, your personal life pretty well then.
Well, I mean, if you know, it was simple enough to be married to a beautiful woman who was also a millionaire.
Right.
That was the simple part.
That's the full package right there.
The hard part was being there for her.
Mm.
You know, I can't speak of four of my 7 wives, but they, you know, they supported me. They kept me going. You know, like. They ensured that, you know, like my work would never be reprinted, that I was blacklisted from every publishing house. You know,
oh, wow.
After 1999. But, you know, and that they through alimony would all receive every ounce of my royalty fees, which are minimal, I should say. You'll still occasionally get a giant novelty check will come by occasionally, but it's got a ridiculously low sum. It costs more to print off the novelty check. I don't know why they keep sending these two.
Well, I mean, and you know, a lot of with the way things have been going with books, you know, kind of writing right. and all that, you know, it seems like the avenue for success for a lot of people such as yourself who are primarily writers is you get the movie, you get the TV show, you get you know, the IHOP menu, you know, you get one of those based on your work.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the money comes in. But it doesn't seem like you had a lot of luck with that.
Well, no, I ended up, always sign your contracts, kids, you know, because I had the aforementioned Mort Humphreys, my agent. He had me sign a few things that I maybe should not have.
Oh, wow.
That was, you know, like, so you look at the, you know, I mean, take my fifth novel, The Abyssal Echoes. That was about my second wife.
Right.
I mean, it was yes, technically it was about snuff films.
Right.
And, you know, like the final girl takes care of all the anonymously sadistic antagonists.
Right.
You know.
But I mean, the wife, you know, your wife's still in there a little bit, you know, coming through.
Yeah, no, she's a ghost on the page, you know, she's the ghost in the machine. Right. But
right.
I mean, it was also, you know, apparently it holds the Guinness Book World Records for the most uses of the verb spurt. In any novel under 60,000 words.
Oh, wow. I love their beer.
Yeah.
It's good beer. I don't usually go for that foreign stuff, but tasty beer.
It was a bit much. She said, and her attorney said, so.
Yeah. But something like that, you've already got the recognition. You're spurting this everywhere. And,
sure.
And you know, that seems like, especially in the 90s, people were all, and even in the early 2000s, you know, with like, you got Saw, you got Hostel, you got all of these Eli Roth joints, if you will, and yet it never got any traction. I mean, is that part of the blacklisting you talked about? Like, what happened there?
I like to think that there are some people in the industry who still have my best interests at heart, and that are rooting for me. You know, there may be a comeback.
Yeah.
2023. Watch out for Dirk Masterson, maybe with things like this. But you know, look. I think it's about the fans. You know, I think if somebody out there is looking for a copy of The Reckoning, and you know they say, hey, Peter Dinklage would be great in this, and then they are personal friends with Peter Dinklage, and they call him and they're like, Pete, and he's like, what's up? And that, I mean, it would be pretty quick.
Yeah.
I think at that point, I think that even with the blacklist in place, even with all of the alimony, I think, I mean, right now, you know, I'm not living in the best place. It's they call it a hotel, but it is not, it is a men's shelter.
Mm.
There are people fighting not more than 5 feet away from me on above, but there's people going hungry outside. I don't have any complaints, you know.
Like arguing or throwing down.
I think it's just a lot of talk more than anything. I think it's
yeah.
You get cramped into spaces, you know, a lot of testosterone that doesn't need to be there, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, and no good way to work it out, you know. I think a lot of these places, you know, that serve people with limited options, you know, put a punching bag in there, you know, put a gym in there, maybe like some yoga, video games.
Yeah, yoga. Offer some yoga, you know, to put the why back into why not, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. So, that's rough, man. That's rough. I mean, what's in the, you got anything in the works these days? I know you said you're retired, and I said you mentioned something pseudonym. I don't know if you want to talk more about that, or if you got anything under your name coming out. What's coming down the pipeline, if anything?
I am writing a three-part maxi series, which I hope to make into a three-part movie. At least, you know, get both a Patreon and a Kickfunder.
Right, right.
You know, you got to get the Kickfunder.
Yeah, totally. What's this three-part series like? I mean, I know you don't want to give the milk away for free, or whatever.
You
but
know, like there probably should be an NDA, but I'm gonna say right now, just imagine if Dune met the Gnostic Gospels, and then Philip K. Dick just got his hands all messy in there. And then Stephen King came by and just gave it the polish that it needs.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at. I'm in book two now. I got the outline for three. Don't worry.
Right on. Nice.
That's my next project. It'll be my. I like to say my magnum opus, but it's got everything. You know, a lot of the word splatter may hit a new Guinness record.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's stiff competition going up against the, you know, there's some pretty splatter heavy novels out there. If you know, my sort of, you know, limited know-how of the situation is, there was a time when they loved splatter. They splatter everywhere on the page, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, you go to a horror convention now, you'll find Jason selling for $300. You know, like it's wow. a camp Winterborn or Wherever Bees.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you look at the occult. It's really big too. You know, you see how much any witch book costs. It's because they burned it, just like all the black cats.
Oh, yeah, makes sense. Like your leather bound versions as well. You know,
all my leather bound signed first editions. You know, it really cramped up my hand to sign all those books just to watch them get burned on the front lawn of my wife's mansion.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
That was not a good day in my life.
No,
But I got to say that bird sanctuary. I mean, there's bitter irony. I don't know if the PETA people knew that was going to be such a bitter irony, but
yeah, no, and I mean, you know, as a writer, you're probably using irony all the time, right?
Well, I was upset that it was gold leaf. You know, I was gonna
Oh,
put an
wow.
extra premium on it for that. You know, it
Yeah,
was
yeah.
like gold leaf four edge. It was bad news.
That's rough. That's rough. Well, you know what? Halloween's coming up, right? Three more days. Part of the reason I wanted to make, I was so eager to get this going. Let me ask you this. What scares you?
The fundamental inevitability of a personality's discorporation. That is to say, the fundamental piece of you that is inside you, how long will that last? There's the concept of eternity, but there's just long periods of time. You know, that's what everybody was always on about. Lovecraft's, you know, he had all these idiot gods in the middle of a orbital space station, or I don't even know. But it was a lot of like these impersonal guys, and they're like, why isn't there some like, you know, personality there? It's like, well, I mean, do you really argue with the storm cloud? So I would say, time. Time is my greatest fear, sir.
Oh wow. Wow. That's deep, man. That's deep. I guess I know. I guess I can understand where you're coming from, because it's tough to imagine, for myself one day. Maybe I'll be too old, my hands will be too shaky to move the board around. Maybe one day they'll take my license away for my Camaro. Can't go down to the Dells no more. I mean, yeah, time kind of comes for us all eventually, That's spooky. That's spooky, man. That really
That's
is.
the thing. That's the thing. Everybody will put on their masks, but it's kind of hard unless you're dressing up like Old Man New Year, or wait, Old Man Old Year. I don't know.
One of
You know when
them.
people dress up like they got the same outfit, but it's a baby and an old man
Yeah.
every. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the is that Kronos? That's a myth of Kronos, isn't it?
I mean, I know there are people that that do that at like parties, not like adult parties. They'll do that, and then kind of, it's
I
like
mean,
a whole
there's, you
thing.
know, it's a good pairing costume, you know.
Yeah.
Like if you're raising a kid and you want to put horns and wings on them, then they look like that saga stuff.
All right, so we're it's been great having you on, Dirk. Been the genius has been flowing through the microphone for
It only comes at one speed. Sorry if I got any on you there, Jim. It was a
yeah.
Jake. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. My buddies call me Jim, but yeah,
That's good.
but so we're gonna move to the I like to end the show with something I call the master's mind, and
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna pose to you a question, and kind of an open-ended question,
Okay,
and
great.
for the next 10-ish, 10 or so minutes, you go ahead and you just whatever comes to mind immediately, whatever is your immediate response. And what I would put to you is, you are making, this is relevant to Halloween, you're making a haunted house. What's it going to
Okay.
look like? You have, let's say, effectively an unlimited budget. You have as much resources that you can throw at this,
Okay.
people are will sign waivers to for whatever.
Sure.
What are you doing for this haunted house?
All right. Well, you say people are signing waivers. What they're really signing is that there are quite a few contracts that will keep them from suing as we delve into their life and
Right.
livelihoods
Okay.
and past. And then a haunted house will be revealed like Extreme Home Makeover, where they show up at the house on the outside. On like, you know, Extreme Home Makeover, where they reveal, you know, to make the big reveal. Well, the person has the reveal and they go into the house, but it's like each room is based on a part of their past, and actors have been paid to play various people in those scenarios.
Ooh, all right.
And the idea is by the time they end like they have to go through each room, and by they get to the final room, they may have gone insane.
Okay.
Seeing something that has already played out in their lives, played out repeatedly, and often with new implications. I think
So a
I
real
don't know if
personal
I
horror, like a real personal horror idea.
Yeah, I think that you know, if we're talking unrestrained, if we're talking U.S. military levels of budget.
Yeah.
I think holograms will be employed heavily.
Okay. All right.
I think a lot of aerosol lysergic acid may be involved.
Oh, so drugs, basically.
I mean, you will. I would say that, you know, a bacterial agent that has some psychoactive activity may be leaked into their water supply before filming begins.
Okay, all right.
I mean, the fact that it will be filmed and then processed on like state TV in China, I don't know, but that's just a secondary. I would say if you had the right contracts, that would be a secondary side hustle for the whole thing. Right. But if we're talking the actual, you know, the actual horror, it would be SAG-AFTRA certified. You know, we would not scab. We would use either reality stars or we would create holograms. And I think the holograms, you know, they got Tupac's out there. They have the, you know, I think they've done the Dead Mouse, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah, he's cool. That's a cool dude. I like his little helmet.
He's got a big head.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. But you're mentioning this, so it'd be like, let's say my name's like Tony, and you know, I had a really bad experience in elementary school where, you know, I pooped my pants in class, let's say, yeah, right? And they all pointed at me and they laughed at me and they called me, you know, Brown Tony or something, Tony Brownstein, whatever. What you're saying is you take this man who is now grown into a man. Maybe he's on the radio. Maybe he does interviews. Yep. And then you would have a hologram of the young version of this Tony, you know, with little brown streaks on his pants and all of his old classmates pointing and laughing at him. You walk into the room and then, yeah, I mean, is that kind of where you're going with it? You just sort of replay.
Okay. Yes. But if we're going to employ absolute ruthlessness, if we're going to treat him like a communist for the holiday, we will also feed him a laxative beforehand so that he will have sympathy movement when he sees his younger self.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I don't want to say the cherry on the top of the sundae, but I just did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's crazy. No. So just a complete. Yeah. No, I can imagine it now. I mean, now let's twist it a little bit more. You know, you don't have to answer this. If you're not comfortable about it. What happens when you go into the haunted house?
What do I see when I go into this myriad of my own crapulence?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, naturally, seven of the rooms would be one room apiece for each wife, I would say.
You know, yeah, sure. You don't even need holograms for that, I bet. Just get them over.
They may
show up.
They may just show up anyway if they hear them involved. They
yeah.
Want the cut.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
But you got the seven wives. Give me one room. Give me one room for us to close out on. You know, give us a little chill.
Okay. We're going into it. We're going into the you know, we've gone through various chaoses. I could give you adolescent fantasies or unchill moments where things were not for real.
Right.
I could go into any number of those, and it could be relatable to you, to your audience.
Yeah, sure, sure, right? Sure. Hit us with one real quick.
Yeah, that when what the final room for me would just be me in a room where all of the walls were made of mirrors, where all I saw was myself stretching off into infinity. Because, I mean, ultimately, that's the scariest thing of all. Time and yourself.
Wow. Chills down my spine. Chills down my spine. Truly a master of the craft, as you put it. Thank you so much, Dirk Masterson, for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I hope that when you're done with this Magni Opus, is that what you're calling it? Magni Open?
Magnus Opus.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't mean to be seem supercilious. But,
oh man, you're hitting. I gotta get my thesaurus out next time I'm hanging out here, so you know we can talk on the same level, man.
Anytime you need me out here, I'm in the middle of book two. We're gonna see how book three looks.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. That has been Dirk Masterson, a genre fiction writer, 72 novels, 400 short stories, all out of print, except maybe something new coming in the future. This has been Minds on the Masters. This is an AWCY-FM production. For old episodes of this program and other programs, you can go to awcyfm.com, or if you're in Chicago, tune in on WLPN 105.5 FM Lumpin' Radio every Saturday, 8 to 9 p.m., or catch it virtually at lumpinradio.com. Excuse me. If you have something you'd like to discuss on the show, feel free to reach out by email at awcyfm@gmail.com. Thanks for catching the show, thank you for catching the show, as always, and please stay spooky. Thank you.